906.
Three in one drug after another. There's no evidence totally resistant TB is being spread from person to person in India.
Speaking to supporters, Romney sounded very much the Republican nominee.
You know that our campaign is about more than replacing a president. It's about saving the soul of America. This election is a choice between two very different destinies. President Obama wants to fundamentally transform America. We want to restore America to the founding principles that made this country great.
Last night was also a stellar night for Texas Congressman Ron Paul. He attracted 23% of the vote, almost tripling his support from the primary 4 years ago. Paul described himself as nipping at Romney's heels and roused his faithful backers with familiar refrains from his campaign.
But liberty has to be re-emphasized because we have been careless over the last 100 years. We have taken liberty and chopped it up into pieces. Some people think liberty has to do with personal habits, which I agree. Other people think liberty is how to spend your money, and they defend that part, and then they fight about when to do what. I think what we need to do is make this emphasis that liberty means you have a right to your life and your privacy and the way you want to live your life as long as you don't hurt people, and you have a right to keep and spend your money as you want to.
In the final days of the primary, polls indicated a possible surge of support for John Huntsman. The former Utah governor ended up in third with 17% of the vote. Huntsman called that a ticket to ride to the next primary state, South Carolina, and repeated his theme of country first.
Because the people of this great nation, the greatest nation that ever was, they're tired of being divided. They want leadership that will stand up and tell us all that first and foremost, we need to come together as Americans in order to solve our problems.
The other three major candidates in the race were far back in the pack. Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum tied for fourth place with 10% each, and Texas Governor Rick Perry finished with a rock-bottom 1%. Today in The Exchange, we examine what happened last night and what it might mean as this Republican nomination contest moves on from the Granite State. Let's hear from you, too. Where did your candidate end up last night? What do you make of those results? And what do you think will happen next? Also, overall, what role do you see New Hampshire playing in this year's nomination process? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests in studio. Dante Scala, associate professor in the Department of Political Science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. He's also a faculty fellow at the Carsey Institute. And Dante, thank you for being here with me last night, and thank you for coming back in this morning. We didn't put you to sleep on the couch in the back.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliota, civic scholar at the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thank you very much for coming in as well.
Sure. Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Wayne Lesbron's Professor of Political Science, Director of the Center for Civic Engagement at New England College. Wayne Lesbruns, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank
really
you, Laura.
Appreciate it.
Sure, good morning.
And Wayne, I want to start with you. So what's the narrative coming out of last night?
Mitt Romney performed very well. I think a lot of media, a lot of coverage going in, thought there might be a strong showing by John Huntsman, which did not materialize. Ron Paul did well. Going into South Carolina, Mitt Romney has a very real Ron Paul problem, and I think that's the story, among others, that we're going to be focusing on.
The Ron Paul problem, and what is that problem?
What do you do with Ron Paul? Ron Paul, it's not as though he's more conservative than Mitt Romney. He's more libertarian, certainly, than Mitt Romney. It represents an interesting challenge, and with all the focus on the ads that Newt Gingrich is going to be running, with the attacks from Perry on vulture capitalism, Will Huntsman run as a more moderate candidate than Romney? There's this Ron Paul problem that really is ill-defined, I think, at this point, and is a challenge for Romney.
What do you think, Dean Spiliotis, adding on to Wayne's narrative, and then you, Dante?
Yeah, and one thing to fill in the picture a little bit more there is, you know, there has been this discussion among Republicans nationally about how to craft someone to be the anti-Romney. It's being really driven by the Tea Party, although Romney did, according to exit polls, did well with Tea Party folks in New Hampshire. But nonetheless, there's this kind of national discussion among social and religious conservatives about you know, how to coalesce behind one candidate. This has kind of dogged them throughout the cycle, the vote being split among any number of candidates, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum, Rick Perry, even Newt Gingrich. So some of us thought coming out of Iowa, Rick Santorum had a head of steam. We thought that maybe that would start to get resolved in New Hampshire. Basically, that whole issue has been pushed down the road to South Carolina. So to the extent that there still is this energy for some sort of alternative to Romney from the social conservatives, that narrative, which we thought was going to progress a little bit here, we're now still waiting to see what's going to happen.
So, Dean, are we still in the same place we were before the primary, or?
Well, at least for one more primary, South Carolina may give a little clarity. I think this is probably going to be Gingrich's last stand. It will probably be Huntsman's last stand, and perhaps even Rick Perry. We'll see about Santorum. So, I think that's a big part of the equation, because we're still looking at a field with, for better or worse, roughly six candidates in it. And so there's not as much. There's more clarity because Romney had, as Wayne said, Romney had a very strong night. But the larger conversation about the Republican field, I think, is still ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Ron Paul is in a position to stop Mitt Romney in South Carolina or Florida. In fact, today I don't think anyone is in a position. Any of these candidates are in a position to stop Mitt Romney from winning. Winning out, basically, in South Carolina, Florida, and taking the nomination.
Really? Wait a minute, Dante. That's a big statement. I mean, here we are. It's only January 11th. You're already saying Mitt Romney's going to be the nominee?
Mitt Romney's going to be the nominee of the Republican Party.
I would agree with that as well. I think that's probably the conventional wisdom at this point.
Mm-hmm. I think we're all in agreement with that, probably, yeah.
That may not be good.
Watch what happens tomorrow,
Dante
right?
Said it first, right? I'm just following Dante, right?
But it's what's clear, though, is Ron Paul is something that if Mitt Romney is the nominee, he has to contend with, not so much in the primaries, but in the general election. Ron Paul pulled Mitt Romney did well all over, and you have to give him full credit. But Ron Paul pulled from a very particular demographic last night, blue-collar voters, working-class voters. So the less wealthy the area of New Hampshire, the better Ron Paul did. He pulled very well among young voters. He won 50% of young voters last night. So young, white, perhaps working class voters who might have gone with Barack Obama, young voters for sure, but blue collar voters. Okay. Mitt Romney's got to find a way to connect with those voters. And we're already seeing some evidence that he does a lot better with people who are like him, affluent suburbanites. And so that question, white working class, blue collar voters in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania, that could be a real interesting group to watch going into a general election, if indeed it's Romney versus Obama.
So, well, yeah,
just to add to that really quickly, and of course, there's this other looming question about whether or not, if Ron Paul doesn't feel like he's being included in the process, if he, takes his roadshow to the Libertarian Convention in May and runs for the Libertarian nomination, and if he were to be a third-party candidate, no, he's not going to win the presidency. But we've seen that in some cases, third-party candidates can really cause problems for the two major parties, and in this case, it would particularly hurt the Republican.
Well, 1992, the Ross Perot effect,
great
helped
example.
Clinton win. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's
Wayne.
What complicates the problem for Romney is that you want to go after him, but you have to manage it in such a way as that he doesn't decide to bolt the party and run his own show. You know, Ron Paul is also the candidate that's bringing new people into the Republican Party, and that's something that the other candidates have had a real problem doing. So, you know, it's, as I said, it's a very difficult problem to manage, and yet it really requires some sophisticated management.
Let me invite our listeners to join us, gentlemen, and then so much more to cover. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Tell us how your candidate ended up in last night's primary and what you think of the results. Also, your predictions about what might happen next in the future states, South Carolina, Nevada, Florida. Also, overall, what role do you see New Hampshire playing in this year's presidential nomination process? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Dante, following up on something that you said, talking about the young blue-collar voters, and you said, Romney's got trouble connecting with the everyman there. But if he's going to win the nomination, as you predicted, so what?
Well, so what is in a general election? I mean, you look back again at blue-collar whites back in 2008. They were probably the last to get on board with Barack Obama in the general election. They were more likely to be Hillary Clinton voters way back then in the Democratic primary than Barack Obama. They only got on at the end because of the meltdown of the economy. Now, one could say over the last 4 years, would that group of voters say Barack Obama, their lives have improved during the Obama presidency? I doubt most of them would. Now, the case, though, that that Mitt Romney can make, can someone who's, you know, a corporate executive, you know, from an affluent background, connect with those voters? And you already heard Democrats talking about this election is going to be all about the middle class. And so can Romney convince middle class voters, white middle class voters, that he's their guy?
And in 2000 and 2004, a lot of those voters that you're talking about were George W. Bush voters. They took a shot at Obama in 2008, and now it's up to Romney to kind of, if he wants to be the nominee, to bring them back into the fold in the general election.
Well, I want to ask about something that was touched on last night and will get a lot more attention as we move to South Carolina. And Wayne L'Esperance, that's the negative attack expected from Newt Gingrich especially, again, suggesting that while Romney was at Bain Capital, he was making a fortune while destroying jobs. Last night, Romney seemed to say in his speech, you know, hey, don't give Democrats more red meat. Let's all stick together here.
Sure. It's sort of a recommitment to Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of fellow Republicans. I think we're going to see a preview of Democratic attacks in South Carolina quite vividly from Newt and from Rick Perry. There's apparently a company down there in a small town that Bain was responsible for coming apart closing. And so Rick Perry has been on that message quite a bit. You know, Democrats have this already. I don't think anything new is being discovered here. I think the concern is that you can beat up a candidate pretty hard, make it a little bit more difficult for them to get the nomination, spend more of the resources up front as opposed to marshaling those resources for the general election. And that's really the argument here, I think.
The other argument counter to that, Wayne, and I know you know this, is, hey, a tough primary makes for a better contender in the general.
That's certainly the point of view that a lot of folks who are supporting Gingrich are making, that, you know, these kinds of attacks, he has to respond to them early. He'll have his strategy down for when they come in the general. So, sure.
Dante, real quick?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's more dangerous than a politician with nothing to lose. Gingrich may think he has nothing to lose now by going very negative against Romney, whom no love lost there, to be sure.
All right. Well, after a short break, a lot more conversation and your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with a test of the emergency alert system equipment.
The New Hampshire State Police Headquarters has activated the New Hampshire Emergency Alert System in order to conduct a required monthly test. That concludes this required monthly test under the New Hampshire Emergency Alert System.
New Hampshire weather, we have a winter storm watch in effect for most of the state from late tonight through tomorrow evening. More details of the weather coming up at 10 o'clock. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, analysis of the New Hampshire primary and a look ahead at where the GOP candidates go from here. Let's hear from you. Call us 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Well, despite a key endorsement from the New Hampshire union leader, former Speaker of the House and Georgia Congressman Newt Gingrich tied for fourth last night with just 10% of the vote.
We're going to take to South Carolina tonight and kick off tomorrow morning a campaign for jobs and economic growth, a campaign for a balanced budget, a campaign for returning power to the states through the 10th Amendment, a campaign for a strong national security, a campaign for a stable, solid Social Security program, both for people now on it and for the young people who are here who deserve a chance in their lifetime to have an even better program with an even greater return. Because if we are smart, we can do better things for people.
Again, that's Newt Gingrich speaking to supporters last night. We have three analysts with us in studio, Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, Dante Scala from UNH, and Wayne L'Esperance from New England College. And Dean, I'll turn to you first. What happened to Newt Gingrich? Hopes were high for this candidate about a month ago.
Yeah, you know, he's just been a really inconsistent candidate. He's had moments of brilliance, and he's had moments where he really has missed opportunities. The union leader endorsement is a great example. Probably one of the most highly covered endorsements of this election cycle, and Gingrich was basically absent from the state several weeks after that endorsement, so he didn't take full advantage of it. You know, he's in an unusual position. I think he benefited so greatly from the focus on debates earlier in the cycle that he sort of found himself in the position of needing a campaign operation on the ground that he didn't really have, and he's been inconsistent about building it ever since. And as we were just talking about, now they've prepared to go, they have started going negative against Mitt Romney over his Bain Capital experience, and there's this fascinating discussion in the Republican Party about what it means for someone like Newt Gingrich to launch a populist attack on Romney for essentially being a successful capitalist, right?
So this is sort of Romney said last night.
And it's really kind of is enveloping the Republican Party. You know, it's the party that favors, you know, entrepreneurship, capitalism, and here's Romney being attacked for being a successful capitalist. So Gingrich has tried to parse that argument a little bit to talk about, you know, capitalism that creates jobs versus capitalism and economic success that destroys jobs.
Well, and he said in that clip that we heard, Wayne L'Esperance, we're going into South Carolina. But besides that negative TV attack that's expected to come out, does Gingrich have a ground game in South Carolina?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't expect there's a whole lot down there. And I think, you know, what the strategy is, a super PAC, I got to be careful with the language here, has received about $5 million from a generous donor. And that's what's going to get their ads up on television. Beyond that, there's not a whole lot else going on in terms of overall staff and in terms of a ground game. But I don't think this is the traditional approach, the town halls, ground game and all that stuff. I think this is going on the air as much as possible and really just going after Romney.
You know, I mean, this is just another case where, you know, the power of endorsements is proven to be sometimes just negligible in New Hampshire. I mean, the union leader endorsement, as Dean said, highly coveted, probably the most a very hyped event around Thanksgiving. Didn't matter.
Okay. Well, and Ron Paul last night thanked the union leader for not endorsing him.
And Joe McQuaid, publisher of the union leader, made sure to go after Ron Paul, label him as dangerous. And Ron Paul did much better than Joe McQuaid's leader of the conservative movement.
Well, again, Romney with 40%, Paul with 23%, Huntsman 17%, and Gingrich, as we said, at 10%, tied with Santorum for fourth. Let's take some calls. Gentlemen, join us, 1-800-892-6477. Your reaction to the results last night, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange at nhpr.org. First up is Seth in Canterbury. Hi, Seth. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Go ahead.
I think your analysts are missing the Ron Paul factor, that a lot of his supporters are not going to go over to Romney, and the GOP needs to look at that very seriously now, that there's a battle for the heart of the party, and I think Gingrich is going to feed into that. You know, I've been on before. We've talked about this, that the populist movement, the Occupy, the Tea Party, is going to define where things go, and I think that you're going to see a big sea change in the GOP, and Gingrich is a factor in that. And I don't think Romney's going to hold on to the nomination. I think I think Dante and everybody else is missing that. They're looking at the traditional GOP, and we're not going to see the traditional GOP running in 2012.
So
we're going to see something a lot more like Ron Paul.
So who do you think it's going to be, Seth?
I actually think it's going to be Ron Paul. I was at the Ron Paul party last night, and the people there are young, and they're the GOP of the future.
Wow. Okay, Dante, what do you think? Seth, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you.
Well, I agree with a lot of what Seth has to say. I mean, I still don't think Ron Paul is going to be the nominee, but I do agree. There's a generation gap here between middle-aged, older conservatives who went with Mitt Romney and younger conservatives who indeed went with Ron Paul in large numbers. And, you know, you see that anecdotally where I teach at UNH. You know, I saw that in 08 and in 2012. The grassroots enthusiasm among young conservatives is with Ron Paul.
Right. And Wayne, you and young people did a lot this year. You had a 2 or 3 day convention with the candidates and their campaigns, and you've been working a lot with college students.
And as Dante says, there's tremendous energy among young people for Ron Paul. You know, when you look at the exit polls, it's difficult to see whether these folks are really Republicans per se, that they identify themselves as members of the party in any other way other than their support for Ron Paul. So it's an opening for Republicans to try to bring them into the party, and he's the only candidate, as I said before, that's doing that. So I think if you take a long view, if you're a Republican, you have to find a way to reach out to these folks and tap into them and get them to join the party. And if you do anything to alienate Ron Paul, you create a problem for yourself.
So how do you do that, Wayne?
Well, I think you have to speak to their issues. I mean, one of the things we know about young voters is that they are graduating with the highest level of student loan debt. They are paying more for a college education, and they are among the most affected by lack of job opportunities when they graduate from college. Ron Paul, the attraction of Ron Paul is he comes out and he says, you know what? These other candidates are tinkering. They're playing around the edges with our system, but they're not proposing fundamental change. Ron Paul wants to break or shake up the system and come up with something completely new, and young people are attracted to that.
You know, it's my perception, Dean, too, that many young people are attracted by Ron Paul's opposition to foreign involvement, the foreign wars, which he says are so expensive. How can the Mitt Romney group appeal to these young voters on that issue? Mitt Romney said the exact opposite last night. He said, I want the strongest military ever.
Right, and I think this is one of the most difficult areas of compromise if you talk about inclusion for the Ron Paul voters. And I think we were actually, as Dante said, somewhat in agreement with Seth in that I don't think these voters are going to leave Ron Paul, which is the concern about Ron Paul running as a third-party candidate. You know, this issue of foreign policy and Ron Paul's isolationism versus some of the hawkishness that you see in the core of the Republican Party, this is one of the biggest issues for him. And I think that it's what makes his candidacy as the Republican nominee so problematic, because for all the war fatigue among Republicans over Afghanistan and Iraq, there still is a sort of an underlying hawkishness and the desire to have a military presence around the world and to fight terrorism, et cetera, that just is very different than what Ron Paul is suggesting. So I think that's going to make that particular issue, I think, is a problem for him in terms of the party, and it's a problem for Romney in terms of figuring out how to engage his voters.
Dante?
Yeah, I think Seth is right, because there's no compromise in Ron Paul, and that's precisely what his voters love about him, is that he is who he is. He's an authentic figure, and it's tough to see where's the compromise. I mean, it was a tale of two New Hampshires last night. The affluent, suburban, southern tier of the state, which went for Mitt Romney, and young, blue-collar, rural voters who went with Ron Paul. Where's the compromise between those two groups? They hardly socialize with one another.
Well, and let me play this out with you, Dante. Okay, what about John Huntsman? Because here he is, definitely not as libertarian or conservative as Ron Paul on many of the fiscal issues. But on the war issues, he's kind of with Ron Paul. He says, let's not get involved in all this interventionism. Let's focus on trade and commerce. So there he's more with Ron Paul. Why didn't Huntsman attract more of these young people?
Well, I must say, because Ron Paul sucked all the oxygen out of the room, and he sucked all the oxygen out of John Huntsman's campaign, especially among younger voters. Huntsman could never establish himself as a maverick with any kind of authenticity, because there was already an authentic maverick anti-war candidate, and that was Ron Paul, and he had a huge head start on John Huntsman.
Right, having run 4 years ago and so forth. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Tell us how your candidate did in last night's primaries, what you make of those results, and how you think he'll do as he moves on to South Carolina and Florida. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, the email exchange at nhpr.org. Up next is Eric in Conway. Hi, Eric, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Your guests, I wonder if they can comment on the fact that Romney winning in New Hampshire. Well, now I remember a governor we had before Lynch. I believe his name was Benson. And didn't he run on the same idea of being CEO in chief? And what a disaster that was. And I don't understand how people in New Hampshire forgot about this. And this idea of a businessman bringing that kind of mentality to a government and not realizing that a government is not a business.
Eric, thanks for calling. You know, Rick Santorum tried that same line of attack in one of the debates over the weekend, Wayne.
And we're seeing that being one of the themes that Gingrich has hopped on, too, that, you know, Romney's greatest strength, the corporate businessman, the guy who understands how to balance, you know, the numbers, they're trying to turn that into a weakness for him. You know, the times are different than when they were when Craig Benson was governor. And I think the other piece to this is that Romney's folks are trying to make the argument that the president, and this is something he likes to say a lot in a stump speech, is in over his head. He doesn't understand how big business works, how to generate jobs, how to stimulate the economy, and somebody from the business world does. That's their argument. And I suspect that in a time when there's a pretty high unemployment rate, that that's resonating with some voters.
What do you think, Dante?
You know, and also, I mean, it's Mitt Romney was a governor as well as a businessman. And as he says often, he had to deal with members of the other party. And arguably, I mean, his, you know, so-called RomneyCare was an example of him crafting bipartisan legislation with the other side.
You know, I have to ask you this, Dean, before we go to the calls. When this campaign started roughly a year ago, many conservatives said, look, Mitt Romney just can't be our guy because conservatives hate what they call Obamacare, and Mitt Romney signed something that looks like Obamacare, but that didn't seem to hurt him in New Hampshire last night.
Yeah, I know. We actually surprised the extent to which that did not ultimately just be one of the driving issues of the campaign here in New Hampshire. You know, I think it probably will be an issue going forward. You know, Romney has made arguments about out of that of states' rights that he would repeal Obamacare as one of his first acts in office, and this is something. Yeah, as you were saying, we've been saying for a long or people have been suggesting for a long, long time that it may be difficult for him to be elected because of Obamacare. But they really seem to get off on a number of other issues off on track from that particular one. So we'll see if it comes back in South Carolina.
Our number 1-800-892-6477. Up next is Dan in Concord. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm a Huntsman voter, and I'm really worried about the direction that the Republican Party's going between the craziness in the State House in Concord and the fact that, you know, I mean, Dwight Eisenhower, Teddy Roosevelt, even Ronald Reagan couldn't get elected as a Republican these days. I mean, you know, Huntsman, I consider him a sane, responsible, qualified, intelligent candidate, and yet a guy who thinks that 95% of the blacks in Washington, D.C. are criminal and spouts crazy conspiracy theories, you know, edging them out by 7 points.
You're talking about Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether he actually said those things is debatable, but I'm not going to get into that here. So what do you do now then, Dan? Do you just sit back and watch with a long face or?
Well, I must tell you, I voted for Obama.
Oh, and Dan, we're losing you, and I do feel badly about cutting you off, but we are losing him on his cell phone there. Here we have it, Wayne, a kind of sad Huntsman supporter.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stories over the weekend, particularly after the Sunday debate and into Monday, about John Huntsman being the quote-unquote sane choice among Republicans, right? That was, a lot of folks were saying that. Someone who doesn't appear to be hostile to science, for example, when he talked about climate change. So, you know, there were a lot of voters, I think, who were interested in that. When you look at the exit polls, folks who had higher education tended to gravitate more towards John Huntsman. And so there was an appeal there. It just wasn't enough. And I think a lot of folks, you know, who would identify themselves as being sort of the Eisenhower wing of the Republican Party agree with Dan and are a little concerned that the party has moved a little far to the right.
Dante? Yeah,
the exit polls tell a good story. There were some Democrats who voted in the Republican primary crossovers. About 4%. Huntsman got 41% of that vote. Among independents, he won 23% of that vote. Among Republicans, 10%. 1 out of 10 Republican voters refused to vote for, arguably someone who framed himself as a moderate to conservative Republican who spent tons of time here on the ground. Now, granted, he had to go against Mitt Romney and so forth. But again, that's another group Mitt Romney has to think about. What would a voter like Dan, a Huntsman voter who thinks the party's going in the wrong direction, that's often what Huntsman said, what's he going to do in the fall? Will he stick with Mitt Romney, or would he go for Barack Obama, or would he just stay home?
Well, give us those numbers again, Dante, because they're stunning. So Huntsman did well among those Democrats who crossed over and voted in the Republican primary. Huntsman did reasonably well among New Hampshire undeclareds or independents, but among Republicans?
1 out of 10 Republicans said they voted for John Huntsman. 1 out of 10.
Wow. Dean?
Yeah, and this has been the question all along. And I think, you know, what happens with these voters, Mitt Romney, in part is going to depend on what Romney's campaign sounds like, were he to be the nominee in November. You know, the assumption among some conservatives who don't like Romney is that, you know, he's just positioning himself right now to do well in the primaries, and in reality he's a moderate. And if that turns out to be the true story, then he may have more of appeal down the road to moderates and independents. You know, I mean, Huntsman, there are a lot of issues with how he ran his campaign. You know, I think he became a better candidate over time. I think this also shows the limitations of retail politics. It's important to do it in the state, but you have to bring a certain level of your own abilities to the game, and it's no guarantee that if you spend a lot of time here, you're going to win the primary.
Let's take another call. This is Gary in Ware. Hi, Gary, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. I happen to live a half a year here in New Hampshire and the other half in South Carolina.
Oh, you're the perfect person to call in today, Gary.
I am a moderate Republican. I have been abandoned by the party. I did vote for John Huntsman, and I am certain beyond peradventure that he has absolutely no chance in South Carolina.
And why do you say that, Gary?
Well, it's far too conservative in every respect. It just doesn't bring the kind of balance that I believe the Republican Party once had.
So who do you think is going to do well in South Carolina, Gary?
Well, I think interestingly enough, that Gingrich has the potential for revitalization down there. He his obvious intellect, coupled with his ability to rabble rouse in certain areas of conservative thought, I think are going to cause Romney some problems there.
All right.
Because I think Romney is, in fact, distrusted amongst the group that would constitute the South Carolina electorate.
Well, Gary, good to hear from you. Thanks a lot for joining us. And Wayne, I'm going to turn to you since you have family roots in Virginia, which isn't quite South Carolina,
it's
but
on
it's the right
way.
Direction.
It's on the way.
Right direction.
You know, actually, there is a connection, and here's what it is. There's also an incredibly large military community and retiree community in South Carolina, and Newt does well with those folks. And so that may be another constituency that he can connect with down there. I agree, too, that I think John Huntsman has a real tough row to hoe in South Carolina. He's not done anything there to this point. He has a minimal organization there. Money at this point is an issue until and unless, you know, someone comes in and helps to bring in additional resources. So, you know, I agree with the caller. I think he has it exactly right.
Wow. And last night, Dante, we were here with Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, and Ken played off of that ticket to ride. John Huntsman said, I've got a ticket to ride to South Carolina. And Ken said, yeah, but no one cares.
Yeah, a third place in New Hampshire for Huntsman's a ticket to nowhere. And I think candidates say a lot of things the night they lose. I mean, they go through these various stages of grief and so forth. You know, it could well be in the next 48 hours, Huntsman, you know, gives some thought to, you know, after a couple days in South Carolina, maybe gives some thought to what he should do.
Really?
Yeah.
Even before the votes are cast, you've got a whole 10 days down there.
Well, it could be a very long 10 days for John Huntsman, and we'll see whether he, you know, he may be thinking, well, what's my next move? Could I have a job in the Romney administration?
All right. Well, Gary, thanks a lot for joining us. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us with your thoughts, comments, reactions to last night's New Hampshire presidential primary. Stay with us.
NHPR listeners in the Littleton area, it's time to retune your radio. There's a new frequency in the NHPR family. It's a full-power transmitter, and it's in Littleton, WEVQ at 91.9 FM. With this signal, we reach nearly 30,000 new listeners in the North Country, continuing our commitment to provide reliable information on reliable infrastructure to all of New Hampshire. For more on WEVQ Littleton 91.9, visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the law firm of Rath, Young & Pignatelli, national impact uniquely New Hampshire, just like the New Hampshire primary, on the web at rathlaw.com. And from Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire, with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a look at the New Hampshire Republican primary and where the candidates go from here. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Well, after mastering retail politics in Iowa, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum hoped to ride his wave of success there all the way to the Granite State, but he finished last night tied for fourth with only 10% of the vote.
The message we had of going out and believing in the American people, believing that we needed to have opportunity, not just for some in America, but we needed someone who was going to go out and speak for all Americans to be able to have the opportunities to rise in society. And we took that message here to New Hampshire. We took it talking about our manufacturing plan, talking about what we're going to do to grow this economy. And we took it to talk about faith and family as the bedrock of our society.
Again, Rick Santorum speaking after his disappointing fourth place, tied for fourth place finish in the New Hampshire primary. Dante Scala, Dean Spiliotis, and Wayne Lesperance are all here in studio. And gentlemen, before we go back to the phones, Dean, to you, what about that message? It didn't play too well here in the Granite State.
Yeah, Rick Santorum came into New Hampshire with a head of steam, and he hit a bit of a buzzsaw. He came in here much the way Mike Huckabee did. There's been some second guessing about whether or not he should have gone straight to South Carolina. I think he probably made the right decision coming here overall. The problem with Rick Santorum is people wanted him to pivot to talk more about an economic message and kind of move away from the social issues. But if you listen to Santorum for any period of time, you realize that he does not compartmentalize those things. That for him, sort of how you think about the economy is a function of family, of faith, his sort of worldview. And he had real difficulty getting away from the social agenda as a result. And we saw him, you know, get heckled and get challenged by people on gay marriage and on abortion. As I said earlier in the show, this whole issue of who's the social conservative alternative to Romney has not been resolved. And now I think Santorum's hoping he can get back some of his mojo in South Carolina.
Dante?
Yeah. I mean, on New Hampshire voters who have a conservative view on issues such as abortion, that's about 4 out of 10 Republicans or 4 out of 10 voters yesterday. Santorum did pretty well, about 20%. I mean, not really close to Mitt Romney, but pretty well. 6 out of 10 voters yesterday have a moderate to liberal view on issues like abortion. And that's a particular feature of the New Hampshire constituency in the Republican primary. Santorum got 2% of those moderate to liberal voters on social issues, 2% versus 20% among conservatives.
And you want to jump in there, Wayne?
Well, it was at the college convention we had that he had the dust up with a high school student over gay marriage, and he
That's
was actually
right.
trying to talk about economic issues. And as Dean pointed out, economic issues for Santorum are about family issues, and that was sort of how we got into it. And you know, that really was the second of a bad series of events on that one day that was the buzzsaw that he experienced in New Hampshire. South Carolina voters have a very different point of view. Mm-hmm. He has a real chance to connect with them on these issues. They're much more socially conservative, more his crowd.
It's going to be fascinating to see what happens
sure.
there. Go ahead, Dante.
Yeah, what's interesting is Mitt Romney did well on both sides of that divide. I mean, social issues tend to divide Republicans in New Hampshire, but Romney did equally well among those who have a conservative view on issues like abortion and gay marriage, and who have a moderate and liberal view. So he was able to straddle that divide.
You know, I want to ask you guys one more thing, then Wayne, you brought this up. We had social media in 2008, you know, and we had YouTube and so forth. But boy, Dean Spiliotis, all the use of this social media and instant communication has just magnified in the 4 years. Wayne mentioned that comment by Rick Santorum, that argument that he got into about what defines marriage, that went all over the place. Talk more broadly, if you could, Dean, about the influence of social media and just video everywhere and anywhere.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this many times. I've watched the impact of technology on campaigning over the last 20 years, and it really is quite remarkable. You know, there was a time where we liked to talk about New Hampshire as this kind of laboratory for new candidates in which they could test their messages in relative seclusion and not fall prey to these larger national gaffes, and that period is basically over. We've gone from, you know, 24-hour news cycle to basically what I call an instantaneous news cycle, where the minute something happens, it's national, international news. And so it's really kind of fundamentally changed how campaigns run, how they organize, how they mobilize their supporters, and also in terms of, you know, how they shape their messages. So, you know, we've talked about the fact that the candidates often seem a bit more guarded now because they are aware that, you know, one wrong move is going to be potentially the end of their campaigns. And that wasn't always the case. So technology, I think it's a plus in terms of mobilization and providing information, but it's really fundamentally changed how candidates interact with their environments.
Well, and it helps candidates save money, right, Dean?
Absolutely. And that gets this bigger issue of, you know, this cycle we've seen several candidates who just never really built grassroots infrastructures in the state because they were getting all this free exposure nationally with the debates, with Twitter, with technology, et cetera. And we're going to have to see kind of how that interacts with retail politics in the future. But it's changing the nature of retail politics as well.
Yeah. That said, I mean, you look at the Romney and Paul, two organizations that did social media to enhance their ground organization, and they both obviously performed strongly. Whereas Rick Santorum visited the state a lot, but had no money, virtually no money, to drive a paid advertising message in New Hampshire. So he had to rely on free media. And when you do, you know, it's catch as catch can, and you never know what's going to happen. You wind up in an argument with a college student about gay marriage.
Right. Mm. One of the striking things about that moment, I was in the back of the room, and in the very back, we had the risers, and you had all the cameras there and all the media there. But I have a really great picture I took of the event, and there in front of me, where all the students were, there are iPads in the air, iPhones, and all manner of digital media. Once the argument began, filming.
Wow.
And so what we did is we're tracking all the media. Hundreds and hundreds of media hits began popping up on our screen from this stuff going viral, going everywhere, over, you know, what was a relatively brief exchange between a presidential candidate and a young woman, a high school student from Newburyport, Massachusetts. It was striking.
What's so fascinating about that to me is we have to think about whether are we now in a situation where technology is causing us to kind of overemphasize and overparse. I mean, I wasn't there, but you say it was just sort of one exchange, probably of a whole town hall meeting. That really became the story, was that one brief clip. And I think we really have to be kind of careful about how we emphasize what we're seeing, because it's so immediately available.
It was about 3 minutes long, and it came to define his campaign. And I think that's exactly right what Dean said.
Let's take one more call, gentlemen. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. And Don's joining us. He's from California, but visiting New Hampshire for the primary. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Don Udall, the last of the Udall generation of Mo and Stuart Udall, and I happen to be on the Republican side of the family. And I supported Romney. I'm delighted that he won. I think all of you are right on in that he will continue to. I think you'll be able to wrap it up fairly quickly, but Ron Paul's people are really vehemently vigorous, and I think he wants to set up Rand Paul in the future for a good future. I don't think he's going to run as a third parole candidate. I mean, I don't think that's logical, and I think there will be a coalescing of the party, Reagan-esque coalescing after South Carolina, after Florida perhaps, or shortly thereafter. And let's hope that I honestly think that this president's been way over his head, and I think we have to do what we can. Like this, my birthday yesterday, my wife said, "Are you sure you want to go back there and campaign?" And I said, "Absolutely sure." And she said, "Be alone," and I wasn't alone.
Well, Don, thanks a lot for calling in.
Sure.
And here we have somebody from a long line of political family, Dante, supporting Romney, and not so worried about what you gentlemen termed perhaps the Ron Paul problem for Romney.
Well, there again, it's kind of a tale of two different camps, right? I mean, you've got someone who's, you know, from a political family, who's part of the political establishment. He's going to do what the establishment does. And what they're going to do over the next 2 weeks is unite and rally around and say, okay, it's time to stop the attacks. But Ron Paul's voters, I mean, they live in a different universe from the Udall family or the Romney family or the Tom Raths of the world here in Concord. I mean, it's a whole different universe. And I don't know if they're going to fall in line.
Well, and what about the others, like the Santorums and the Gingriches and the Rick Perry? Wayne, we haven't even talked about Governor Perry yet.
Right, Governor Perry, who has...
They're all hoping for a comeback in South Carolina.
South Carolina really does become, for them, the last stand. Florida is an incredibly expensive state to run in, so this is the one that there's some affordability. They can try to make a stand. I suspect we're going to see a real winnowing of the field. To Dante's point, though, the hope is that if the caller is right, that Rand Paul, and I'd be willing to take bets with the folks in this room, that we will eventually see Rand Paul on a presidential ballot in New Hampshire. The hope is that if Rand Paul is the future of the Paul family, that might have some restraining effect on Ron Paul going forward. He doesn't want to blow up the party because he wants to set things up for his son going forward. But boy, now we're like, you know, 10 yards down and speculating a whole lot. I think it's going to be quite a bit of fun going forward. I'm not so sure we'll see that coalescing right away.
Well, Don, good to hear from you, and have a safe trip back to California. You know, gentlemen, we should mention that there was a Democratic primary yesterday, and Dean Spiliotis, the Obama White House made a huge effort to make sure that Democrats went to the polls. How come?
Yeah, well, I mean, you want to show that you have some organization and some support in the state. It's funny, I felt that as well. I was getting kind of texts and emails throughout the day from Democratic activists who were saying, we want Obama to do well. We want to have a show of strength. New Hampshire for the last several cycles has been a purple state, a swing state. Some people still think it made the difference in 2000 when Al Gore lost to George Bush by only 7,000 votes here. It's important for an incumbent president to show that he still has a strong base of support, and particularly in the case of New Hampshire, where they knew that Romney was going to have this very strong showing. They wanted to show that, you know, President Obama was on par or better than Romney in terms of support in the state.
Let me ask you this, Dante, and this shows you how many primaries I've done here in New Hampshire. In past years, when the primary has been all on the Republican side, the Democratic White House, whoever it may be, will often send up surrogates to make sure that Democratic message stays in the mix. You know, the Treasury Secretary will come up, or the HHS Secretary will come up, and so forth. Did the Obama White House do that this time to make sure that the Democratic message wasn't lost in all the attention on the Republicans?
You know, there was a leading Democratic spokeswoman up from Florida whose name's escaping me now.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
She was here. She was last night. Yeah. She was at the Radisson. Yeah.
She's here
exactly. So there were some surrogates up here. There was at least one surrogate up here. And also, interestingly, as soon as the results went up of the New Hampshire Republican primary last night, ads went up on the union leader's website for Barack Obama.
But I'm not just talking about last night. I'm talking about during the whole course of the campaign where, you know, I remember in the 90s when Bill Clinton didn't face a challenger and it was all Republicans campaigning for the nomination to run against him. You know, Wayne, I remember the Treasury Secretary coming up. I remember Labor Secretary Robert Reich coming up. A couple other White House folks steadily coming to New Hampshire to make sure that Democratic message was kept on the front burner along with the Republicans.
Right. With the exception, I think, of a visit by Joe Biden and some Skype sessions with the vice president, I haven't seen much of that, you know, except for primary day. In our convention that we did, we invited the White House to send a surrogate, and we were told that Governor Deval Patrick might be a surrogate, that they plan on having him in the state. I don't think he ever came. There was talk of Governor Dukakis coming. None of that materialized. So I think your instincts on this are right. I haven't seen much of a presence by the White House here in New Hampshire.
And, you know, the White House is not especially popular in New Hampshire. I mean, of all the blue states from 2008, President Obama has fallen pretty far to the bottom as far as approval ratings go for those blue states. So they may decide to lay low for a little while. But now you can see, you know, Obama's opened several offices here. I mean, I think the campaign's about to be joined.
Well, and somebody said, I can't remember who, Dante, while Iowa Democrats got a live telechat with the president on their caucus night, I think New Hampshire got something from Joe Biden.
Right. Yeah, well, Iowa, Obama won Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa was good to Obama, right.
Yeah.
All right, so please no one groan when I ask you this, okay? The primary is over. We can now all focus on our own elections here in New Hampshire. It's going to be hot this year. We'll have congressional elections. We'll have a very interesting gubernatorial race. We'll have a ferocious campaign for the State House, given the controversies over what the Republican majority has done there. Dean Spiliotis, do you care to give us a preview?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot that's going to be going on here. We're going to have a doozy of a gubernatorial race because John Lynch is not running for re-election. Ovid LaMontagne has already announced his candidacy on the Republican side. Kevin Smith, the former director of Cornerstone Action, has announced his candidacy. On the Democratic side, Maggie Hassan, former state senator from Exeter, has announced her candidacy. We've had Annie Custer in District 2 congressional race, who basically never stopped running after she lost a very close election to Charlie Bass. You know, Carol Shea Porter's going to try to get her seat back in the first district. And, you know, the reviews on Congressman Ginta and Congressman Bass have been mixed. They're going to have their hands full defending their seats. And then we have the legislative elections, the Republican House of Representatives in New Hampshire has generated a lot of controversy. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a heck of an election cycle in addition to the presidential race.
Well, and how does that national narrative, Wayne, of this big 2012 presidential campaign trickle down to the narratives here in the Granite State?
Well, they're all interrelated, right? So if the president wants to be successful in Washington, he needs a Congress that'll work with him, whoever that president will be. So there's going to be a big push to try to get, you know, members of each party elected. I think the gubernatorial piece is also very important. It tells you a little bit about the mood of the country going forward. The Republicans do very well in New Hampshire in terms of the gubernatorial race. It looks like they're going to have an easy win. I don't know that that's true. Certainly that may predict what's going to happen in the presidential. I agree with Dean. It's going to be a very exciting race. But Laura, I know that your listeners really care about the primary, so I'm here to say 1,460 days till the next New Hampshire presidential primary.
No, counting. Say it isn't so. I need a chance to rest up first, sure. Wayne, I think. What do you think, Dante? Look ahead to our state elections. We'll be actively covering, and the four of us will be sitting down, I'm sure, on this.
Yeah, I mean, a key thing to keep in mind is Republicans have an awful lot to lose in 2012. I mean, they won virtually everything in 2010.
This is here in New Hampshire. Yeah.
Here in New Hampshire. And, you know, 300 out of 400 seats in the state legislature. At some point, you know, gravity is going to kick in 2012. I mean, there's no way this is a state that's 3-1 Republican. I mean, this is still a swing state. And so things may well swing back. However, Republicans have certain institutional advantages. I mean, if a New England Republican is running in a New England state, you know, even a swing state, you got to think that's worth a couple of points on the table. And again, not having John Lynch, who has routinely racked up big numbers, that's a real problem running against now a well-known Republican, perhaps, or one of his challengers.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. I know you've all been so busy. Thank you very much for being here. Dante, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Dante Scala, Associate Professor in the Department of Political Science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. Dean Spiliotis, good to see you. I'm sure we'll see you again soon.
Sure. Thanks, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, Civic Scholar at the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Wayne Lesperance, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Wayne Lesperance, Professor of Political Science, Director of the Center for Civic Engagement at New England College. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer today is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Emily Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation and learn more about what we're doing every day. Thanks for listening. I'm Laura Kanoy.